Welcome to episode 10 of the FASD Success Show. We are currently having a blizzard here where I live in Canada, and I'm stuck indoors with a toddler.
Welcome to the FASD Success Show, the only podcast where you can get real-world information about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. This show will help you create calm in the chaos, have hope for the future, and more importantly, save your sanity so you don't lose your flippin' mind. Now, here's your host, caregiver turned world FASD educator, Jeff Noble.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode number 10 of the FASD Success Show. I am your host, Jeff Noble, and I am so glad you are here. Thank you for joining the show that is trying to provide as much success about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder as possible, and have a good time when we're doing that. I think it is vitally important that we see this in a positive light, view this in a positive light, talk about it in a positive light, although at the same time discuss the hardships and the trials and the tribulations, because we don't want to ignore that. But what we want to do, and what the show tries to do, is accentuate success. That's my word of the day, and probably the only time I will pronounce that right. So you are going to be so thankful that you're listening to this show today, because today we are talking all about FASD and the brain. We are talking with Dr. Catherine LaBelle, and she is amazing. She's a researcher that analyzes data from MRIs. I learned so much about the brain from this podcast. And it's important to know, you know, as much of the brain as possible, because FASD is a brain-based disability. Everything we do, everything we say, how we take in our environment, how we process information, it is, you know, all run by the brain. And we know that FASD is an organic brain injury, so that could result in differences in brain structure and function. And part of the show is we want to help you so you can help your kids function better. And that's what this is all about. And education is the way through that. And I geeked out during this interview because, you know, I love the brain. I love talking about the brain. The information is vast and ever expanding. But today it was great. Because what I was able to do during the interview is actually answer questions that parents and members of our closed Facebook group, www.facebook.com/groups/FASD forever. And this is the way that they could participate. This is the way that you, if you are in the group, are able to participate. And so I straight up ask her questions that you guys ask me. For example, I talk about, can the brain grow? Can you rewrite the FASD brain like you could with other brain injuries? Is there a catch-up period in development? Is there any good research about diet or supplements helping the brain? We even talk about her opinion or any insight about therapies like neurofeedback, and if there's any research or if there's any evidence that they're successful or not. We talk about how the FASD brains grow differently. It's that a study she's doing that if you qualify, if your kiddos qualify, can really help with the advancement of understanding around FASD and mental health. We know a very large percentage, some say 94%, some say 95% of individuals on the spectrum will have mental health issues. And so they are trying to pinpoint when and why and how, so that can influence and help folks who are coming up with interventions make better decisions about therapies and interventions from the research. So it's really fascinating. So when I talked to Dr. LaBelle, she described her introduction into FASD and MRIs as serendipitous. It's just like the 2001 movie with John Cusack and Kate Beckinsale. Come on. Every time I hear the word serendipity or serendipitous, the movie is the first thing I think of.
That was an accident. Write that down again, please.
I can't. That was a sign. Fate's telling us to back off.
and probably you too. Okay, so don't judge me, right? So basically, you know, Catherine, she's a researcher that works with a team that studies people's brains and how they develop. And they're specifically trying to find out how brains of neurotypical individuals may be different from people who've experienced prenatal alcohol exposure. That's like almost quote from her right from the interview. So literally get your pens and papers out. It's going to be cool, or your smartphones out, or whatever doodads you kids are using these days, you know, because we're going to start off right away by asking is, first of all, what is an MRI? And then is it useful? Are MRIs useful for caregivers? Does it provide answers that maybe they're looking for into areas of the brain that are damaged or what parts of the brain that aren't functioning? She is very straightforward and honest and awesome. So I tell you what, I'm not going to waste any more time flapping my gums because we really need to hear this lady because she is fan-frickin-tastic. So Jeff, tell us, who is this Dr. Catherine LaBelle? Who is this lady that you speak of who is well versed in the dance of the brain? And I'll tell you, Catherine LaBelle is an associate professor of radiology at the University of Calgary and the Canada Research Chair in Pediatric Imaging. She is a member of Alberta Children's Hospital Research Institute and the Hotchkiss Brain Institute and leads ACHIR's Child Brain and Mental Health Program. Dr. LaBelle has received a PhD in biomedical engineering from the University of Alberta and completed a postdoctoral training in neurology and pediatrics at the University of California, Los Angeles. Her research uses MRI to study how brain structure and function change with age in typical children and those with neurodevelopmental disorders, including fetal alcohol spectrum disorder and learning disabilities. She also examines how brain structure and function are related to cognitive, behavioral, and environmental factors, including the prenatal environment. Ladies and gentlemen, let's talk to that rock star and find out what that just meant. So again, this is awesome to talk with Dr. Catherine LaBelle. Dr. LaBelle, thank you so much for joining me today. First question, can I call you Catherine?
Of course.
Okay, excellent. So, Catherine, you do MRIs. You, first of all, what is an MRI and what does it stand for?
Magnetic resonance imaging. So MRI is a way of taking pictures of the inside of the body. In my case, we study the brain using powerful magnets and radio waves. So it's non-invasive. There are no negative side effects. It's safe, and it's safe to do repeatedly.
Great. So now I'm going to back up because I just had to get the, you know, the big question out so we know what we're talking about. But let's rewind because you certainly didn't start here. How did you get involved with FASD? Like, did you know about FASD before you started? Like, give me a little bit of your origin story. If this was a Marvel movie, hit me with it, okay?
So after I finished my undergraduate degree, I volunteered for 5 months in Fort Providence, which is a town in the Northwest Territories. Mm-hmm. And I worked in a school there. And I had heard about fetal alcohol syndrome sort of a little bit, but I really didn't know anything at all. And I certainly didn't know what FASD was or that there were other things besides fetal alcohol syndrome. But obviously, a lot of kids in the school were affected in negative ways. And so it was very sort of eye-opening for me to see the challenges that those kids faced and the kinds of supports that they needed, and also how little we really knew about the disorder. Particularly when I explained it to people back home, sort of some of the kids that I was dealing with, they just had no idea that FASD existed or really what it was. So it was eye-opening for me as someone who didn't know a lot about it. And then also eye-opening for me to try to bring the knowledge back and realize how little the rest of the world really knew about it. So that was my first real introduction to FASD. And I think when my interest really was sparked, because I realized how much we still needed to know about how to properly support and help those kids.
So you were not in the MRI field, or were you, before you knew about FASD?
So no, I did a little bit of MRI research in my undergrad. Uh-huh. But at the time when I was in Fort Providence, I was just sort of exploring. I knew I wanted to go to graduate school, but I didn't know what I wanted to study. And then it was really serendipitous, actually. I ended up in an MRI lab doing MRI research. And after I started, this opportunity to study FASD with MRI came up, and I just jumped at it because I thought, how cool. This is combining sort of my experience and interest from before with my interest in MRI and brain development.
And then, since this is a Marvel movie, something happened in the MRI machine, and then your brain grew twice as smart, and that's why you know all of this.
No, totally.
Yeah, we're going with that. That's cool. Yeah. By the end of this interview, I'm coming up with your Marvel name, okay?
That's what I was just going to ask. What's my superhero?
I don't know, dude. Now you're putting me on the spot. I'm supposed to put you on the spot. That's how this works. Can you tell me, like, what do you do on a day-to-day? Like, you know, you deal with MRIs, but what is your gig? If I was to meet you at a cocktail party or a ball game, I don't care, and I said, hey, dude, what do you do? And you would say, I?
So I'm a researcher. So I work with a team, and what we do as a team is we study people's brains and how they develop. Now, part of that is recruiting people for studies and measuring their brain and also their behavior and how they think. And most of my time is actually spent then analyzing that data. So trying to figure out what that data means, measuring. So we do an MRI brain scan, for example, and then it takes a lot of time to measure things from that. So how big is this part, or how connected is that part? And then look at all of that data together to try to understand how, for example, the brains of children with FASD might be different from the brains of children without alcohol exposure.
And so we are going to talk about a study that you are currently doing right now. But what I like doing, busting myths. Like, I like to talk to the people that know. And I also like to regurgitate what I know, because I want you to correct me if that's wrong, because I tell this to people, you know, so no ego here. I just want to get it. I want to get it right. So if some of those questions are posed like that, it's because it's what I'm currently saying to people. And dear God, if it's the wrong answer, I'm just joking. I think it's pretty accurate, right? But it's always good to get better. And I always like to ask how you explain things, because that's how I learn as well. Individual parents want the best for their kids. And I hear this in my group, our closed group on Facebook, facebook.com/groups/FASD forever. Plug. And they are inquiring, is it necessary? Is it important? And is it helpful to get an MRI of their individual on the spectrum? Now, we are assuming this is the child's already been diagnosed, because an MRI is not a part of a diagnosis.
Right. So generally speaking, an MRI is not going to be helpful either for the diagnosis or to understand the particular challenges that a child might face. There are exceptions to that, but for the most part, the brain of a child with FASD looks remarkably similar to the brain of a child without. Yeah. Only when we get down to the nitty-gritty quantitative things that we can start to see differences, but we're talking at a group level. Okay. Sort of an analogy I use is how men tend to be taller than women, but not every man is taller than every woman. It's the same with brains. So on average, an FASD brain might have parts that are smaller or less connected, but not everybody with FASD is going to have that smaller part or that less connected part compared to everybody who doesn't have FASD.
Yes, ma'am. I'm going to regurgitate this. It's not helpful. And in your opinion, professional opinion, it wouldn't be recommended to get an MRI, because the parents will not get the information that they are looking/hoping for, correct?
Correct. It's not diagnostic. It's a research tool, but it's not a diagnostic tool.
And even, you know, let's say they have a diagnosis, for even understanding impairments, is it useful to get an MRI, yes or no?
No. Again, useful for research, but not useful on an individual basis.
Because it's not a single MRI, correct or incorrect, you could put a neurotypical brain, right? That's what we say, neurotypical mm-hmm. brain, not normal, because we're all freaks. And an individual's on the spectrum, you put those brains side by side, more often than not, except in extreme cases, you cannot tell the difference, correct?
Correct. To the naked eye, nobody's going to notice any differences.
So when they have those pictures, you know, you see in B-roll in those news reels where they're pointing at the MRI, if you put two beside each other, one FASD, one not, the difference is you can't tell.
Correct.
Okay. So why not? Is it because it is it's so minute, like it's so small, the differences in the brain, and that's what you're saying until you look at a lot of images?
Right. The differences are subtle. So everybody's brains are different, whether you have FASD or whether you're neurotypical or whether you have a different disorder. Everyone's brains vary. And looking at one brain is difficult to see abnormalities unless they're really prominent and really big. And that is not typically the case in a child with FASD. So their brain falls within the range of normal values.
Excellent. So I just, you know, this is important. So if you are a parent, if you are thinking about, should I get an MRI, it is not as useful. It's not useful for what you're looking for the differences in the brain. That would come with a good assessment, could certainly.
Correct.
Right. Okay, great. Yeah. Now, here's another one that I get asked all the time. Can an FASD brain grow? Are they in this state? Is because the damage was done during development? Is there hope? Can the FASD brain grow? Are the parents doing structure, routine, consistency? Is there an end? Can it grow?
I always describe it as a lifelong disorder, but that doesn't mean it's permanent and unchanging. So yes, absolutely, the brain can grow. Everyone's brains are changing throughout childhood and adolescence. We call that brain plasticity.
Yep.
Everyone will have some degree of brain plasticity. That plasticity is likely different in kids with FASD. That's one of the things we're studying right now, but it still exists. So absolutely, the brain is changing and can change in kids with FASD.
Talk about plasticity. I hear about plasticity. This is my answer, is that because our brain does have plasticity, wouldn't it be different than an injury, say like a stroke or something where a brain was already developed and you could make new connections? Would that be different in an individual with FASD who might not have had that area develop at the same? Am I making sense?
Sort of. You're talking about are you talking about the difference between an in utero injury, which is maybe how we could characterize FASD?
So people say you can rewire the brain after a stroke. And my answer is the brain was structurally developed different with FASD.
Yes. So you're right, but there's rewiring that's going on constantly in the brain. So the brain is always developing, and certain environmental conditions or activities or interventions or treatments can all promote different types of plasticity. So the brain is always capable of change. We have some good evidence that brains of kids with FASD maybe have less plasticity than a neurotypical kid, but that doesn't mean they have no plasticity.
Okay, that's fair. So there can be changes and there is plasticity, but maybe not as much as a neurotypical brain.
Right. Maybe we just need to find the right interventions and the right time to do it to make sure that they work in the most effective way.
Right. Because when we're talking about MRIs as well, you said there are extreme cases, because I can already hear the comments in the emails I'm getting. What are some of those extreme cases where an MRI could show? Like, what has research shown areas of dysfunction?
So the early studies of fetal alcohol syndrome of these very, very affected kids with really severe prenatal alcohol exposure did show like dramatic reductions in brain volume, for example. Or there have been very extreme cases of kids who have either the corpus callosum, which is the major structure that connects the two hemispheres, is missing or very underdeveloped. These are really rare cases and tend to be either in the most severely affected children or in kids who have something else on top of it. So kids who maybe have FASD and epilepsy or and autism or and something else.
Are those comorbidities?
Yeah.
So in the corpus callosum, just because this is an educational show, is that it is the, like the telephone wires, like the Ethernet cable that connect the right and left brain, right?
That's right. We have lots of brain wiring. It's one of the biggest sets of wiring, and you're right. It connects the left and the right sides together so they can work together.
There could still be damage in the corpus callosum, but more often than not, it could be so minute that it is not caught on an MRI.
That's right. It's more subtle damage where we have to take very special quantitative measures of it, and you can't just see it on a picture.
Aha. Right. So I just keep on reiterating, even though there are extreme cases, 99% of these kids that they put together, they you can't see a difference.
Correct.
So save your money, save your time, you know, save having to put the kids in the tube, right? Okay, cool. Well, this is excellent. But now you are saying that the brains do grow. So this is what I've heard. And this is not research-based, but we find that there's a bit of a catch-up when they're older. Is there a catch-up in brain growth at us? Is it when they're older, or is it a different period of time? Or does it happen altogether?
So we're just, that's one of the things we're studying right now, is trying to figure out those trajectories of brain growth in children and adolescents with FASD. There's, like I said, we know that brain development is happening differently. Sometimes it happens slower and sometimes it seems to happen faster. There is a little bit of evidence that it may be slower at first and then like you say, faster or sort of catching up later in adolescence.
Late teens, or early 20s, we talked before. Is that still,
that's
still legit?
I want to emphasize that we still don't fully understand that, but that's sort of what it looks like might be happening.
Okay. So that's better than, you know, the hearsay of them being in their 30s catching up. So that also, take a deep breath, parents. It's not into the 30s, right? Late teens, early 20s, faster development of the white matter. Is that correct?
Yep. Okay. And the white matter is the brain's wiring.
Basically. Okay. Yes. So I wanted to get into that because we're learning about the brain today with you, Catherine. Gray matter, there's two things in our brain, gray matter and white matter. Gray matter is like the computers in our brain. So we have a huge ass network, right? Of computers in our brain.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the white matter is the wiring that would connect. So it's almost like your home network.
Yeah. And you can think about, you know, different parts of the brain are specialized for different things. So you might have a computer that's focused on vision and a computer that's focused on letting you speak and a computer that's focused on how objects look, how their shape or something. And you need to network all of those together to be able to have your brain function properly. So the wiring is what enables that network.
And alcohol changes the wiring, disrupts the wiring. How do you explain that?
Yeah, alcohol disrupts both the gray matter and the white matter. So you're affecting the computers and you're affecting how they're wired together, basically. In multiple different ways, but really broadly speaking, the gray matter tends to be smaller in volume. So sort of have less computing power to continue
the technology. Okay, processing.
And the wiring is weaker. So you've sort of impacted it at both levels. Both the computers are slightly less
powerful. So I say it's like a Mac computer, and we have like a Mac, and individuals would have the processing of like Commodore 64. Can still process, just clearly different.
Right. And then add on top of that weaker connectivity among them.
So can I say then, can we metaphorically say the white matter could also be like roads too?
Yes.
You know, wire, anything, it's traveling, right? So information is traveling. So we can use, say, white matter is like the roads and neurotypical, we have like a 4-lane highway and we can just give her no traffic, no weather. And an individual on the spectrum could have like a gravel road. Still there, just less.
Totally.
Okay, cool. So that makes sense. I wanted to make sure because I also say that.
Yep.
So the weaker the processing is, the slower of the actual processing, which would result in slower retrieval of information. And then we expect people to answer a question as soon as we ask it. Individuals on the spectrum might not be able to because they're still processing the information.
Right, exactly.
Ah.
Okay. And if one part of your brain is not sort of working at optimal capacity, you may need to rely on other parts of your brain to help support something. Mm-hmm. So that would take even longer if those roads are more gravelly and harder to travel, but yet you need to go further to do the same thing.
Yes.
That's going to take even longer.
That comes down to expectations and how we don't do that. Okay. That's what we need to know because it's important because then an individual on the spectrum, their default answer is often, I don't know. Because we don't give them enough time to figure it out because of the wiring. Now, I've heard the coding on the wires, because if you look at any wire, right, there's coding on a wire, any wires at home. And is that myelination? Is that called the myelin sheath? It's like the coding. Is that thin? Are there exposed spots exposing the wires? Because I read that from Diane Melvin.
Yeah, so white matter in our brains is coated in myelin, and the myelin makes that transmission of information more efficient. So just like you say, it's like an insulation on the wire to help that signal travel. And that's a process that starts right at the end of pregnancy and then continues throughout childhood and even into the early 20s. So that is one of the things we actually try to measure with MRI, but we know that that process seems to be happening differently in kids with FASD.
Okay. This is excellent. Sometimes there's no alcohol introduced and everything gets to where it's supposed to. Mm-hmm. And that's what really makes everybody unique. When you are doing your research, how does it help to have like multiple MRIs? How does that help you look at the minute details? Like, you know, give us a little insight when you're looking at your data. What are you looking for?
So we're looking for group differences between children and adolescents with FASD and children and adolescents without, neurotypical kids. Really on a group level. So as I said, on an individual level, it's very hard. You couldn't take an MRI, even with the quantitative measures we use, and look at it and say that person has FASD and that doesn't. It's more when we build it up in a whole group that we can start to say, okay, this whole group tends to have this part of the brain is smaller or this part of the brain is less connected compared to a group without FASD. So we need a lot of data to really understand what's going on at that level. The second thing we do is we look at relationships. So because there's a lot of individual variation in the brain, and there's also a lot of individual variation in terms of ability, so in terms of behavior or in terms of thinking, those kinds of things, we can look at how the brain is related to behavior. So one of the things we're interested in is mental health, for example, and we can look at, you know, in kids maybe who have higher anxiety, do they tend to have brain differences in a certain area?
Trying to target it instead of a generality. Because we know, and science, it's not a generality, research shows that, and this is, I get this from the Canada FASD Research Network, 94% of individuals on the spectrum will have either anxiety or depression or both.
Yeah.
Which is now a primary characteristic, what comes with the package of the disability, where the field used to believe that it was secondary. It was brought about. Is that true? It's a primary 94%. Am I right?
It's a huge proportion of people with FASD will have a mental health challenge. Yes.
And the reason it's anxiety and depression and not bipolar, schizophrenia, the other mental health is because the science has not told us that, correct?
We don't know that yet. Yeah, that's so, right. But that's one of the things we're trying to figure out. Yeah.
So that's what we're going to be talking about with this study. Absolutely. Okay. But it's, I say that stat, and I'm not looking for a gasp reaction when I talk about it in my trainings. I'd say that to let parents know they could do everything right. Yes. They could make the best environment, and still the individual can develop anxiety or depression or both.
Yes.
And so that's not a reflection of their parenting, but rather an outcome, a primary outcome of the disability.
Right.
Okay. And so this is, you guys are trying to figure out, can you pinpoint the specific area of the brain that has changed to cause that?
Yeah. So I think this is what we're testing. I don't know this yet. I think that some of the brain damage caused by the prenatal alcohol exposure is what's making the brain more susceptible to developing anxiety and or depression.
Because of the structural changes,
right,
would also include like hormonal and chemical changes?
Yep. For sure there are other factors in there, but I think if the brain is not developing in a typical way, it's probably going to be predisposed to some of these problems already. Like you say, almost no matter what you do, it's just much more vulnerable to have these difficulties later on.
Right. So take that seriously and heed. It's just good. And am I jumping ahead in terms of finding supports for that? Does, you know, the therapies for that, how do we help them? Am I jumping ahead, or are you trying to find this area first before we look into interventions?
We're trying to figure out sort of where and when and how the brain is getting off track, basically, in order to inform the development of targeted therapies. So for just as an example, okay, we know that there's some neurostimulation therapies that are useful now in treatment-resistant depression, not related to alcohol exposure, right? But you have to know when and where to do that to make it effective. So if we want something like that years down the line to be effective for kids with FASD, we need to know where in the brain that wiring is different, basically.
So this is like this stage of evolution in your endeavor. We now know that it happens, 94%. And now you're trying to find out where and why, so you can inform the interventions.
Exactly. And when as well. So at what age are kids developing this anxiety or depression? And can we use the brain to help us understand who might be more likely to go on to develop this?
Just better data so we can be better informed. And what if, could you imagine, you pinpoint that. And so we know a certain year and a certain population, even to take your foot off the gas, like with the expectations, because so maybe it's a mental health focused year.
Yeah. That's the dream, I think, is to be able to say children with this phenotype are more likely to have this problem.
Hi, we interrupt this interview to bring you the definition of phenotype. Phenotype is a noun, and I got this from the Cambridge Dictionary. And a phenotype is the physical characteristics of something living, especially those characteristics that can be seen. Phenotype. Now back to the interview.
So let's get supports in place early so that we can avoid problems down the line.
Because the stats say that the likelihood is this percentage that this will happen. So you can really pinpoint it. That's pretty powerful, dude. Oh, I know your Marvel name, by the way. It's Mariah.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, right? Like Mariah, okay. Mariah, right? Okay. If you guys have better suggestions for Dr. LaBelle, you let me know. But she is a Marvel character because you're doing it. You're in the lab. I couldn't just do what you do. I am getting you shirts made up. I'm talking to Audrey to say, researchers are rock stars.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
You have like a drawing of Mariah on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, we should. We'll get. Hey, man, I know we got some creative people out there. I can tell you.
I love it.
I can't draw, but Mariah, isn't that? I thought that was clever, guy. Okay, I want to talk about a few more things. We're going to answer some questions, then we're going to talk. We're going to give all the details about this MRI and how you can help Mariah. Yes, it's on now. It's sticking. Help her with her goal. And if you have an individual on the spectrum and you qualify, and we'll give all that information soon, but I do have a couple of questions, and we are learning a lot, and I really do appreciate it. The brain can grow. It may grow different. This is what we're learning. There can be a catch up in the development of the white matter in the late teens, early 20s. The windows of plasticity when it grows may be different with kids with FASD, maybe. What about, I hear there's products out there, man. There's products like, you know, fish oil and omega 1684 and certain foods. That can a particular diet, supplements help an individual on the spectrum's brain grow?
So broadly speaking, there's very little evidence that those particular things are going to be effective.
Okay. So it's always good just to eat good regardless.
Of course.
Because it, you know, impacts other areas. But in terms of, I'm just trying to protect the parents, I'll be honest with you. You know, they just want something to work. And I literally just talked to this woman who sings parody songs, and one of her songs is "Maybe This Time." You know, you tell me to dye my clothes purple. Maybe this time it'll help. Maybe this thing will help. And I just want them to be able to put their resources and their time into things that could actually help. And so, while a good diet can often help, you know, just your overall health, it's not going to change the brain. Evidence, there's not good evidence that it suggests that it will change the brain or make these significant impacts that maybe parents are hoping for.
Right. There's very little evidence for these sort of new, I don't know what's the word.
Techniques?
Sort of like the sexy new thing that's going to save everything. I mean, they generally don't pan out as advertised.
One of the things that's advertised, and it could be hell of expensive, is neurofeedback. I hear this. There's clinics, you know, they'll go to these clinics. It's expensive. It's, you know, I hear some people say yes, no, what, because they're expensive. What do we know about neurofeedback?
We know very little. There's very little evidence, I think, that it's going to make a lasting difference. So again, I mean, people know their children best. I don't, but right. I think these are often advertised to be better than they actually are.
You've never been to a conference where the speaker who's doing innovative research says neurofeedback is the way to go?
No.
Right. And we're not, I'm not sitting here, this is not discredit, and we're not being Debbie Downers, just the real facts.
Yeah.
This is what you know so far. So save your pennies, folks. Save your money, because there's other things we could do, and there's a lot cheaper things that you could do to help your individual on the spectrum. So would just think about that when you're sitting in front of a salesman who works at one of these treatment centers. You know, you can call them a salesman. They could be a therapist. They could be both, you know, because they have bills to pay, and they might even believe it. But studies suggest that there isn't enough effective evidence that it is an appropriate practice that That's will right. yield the outcomes that parents hope and want.
Right.
Aha. Okay.
If there was good evidence for it,
right.
it would be more broadly acceptable in the...
Yeah, you're not trying to say, well, I didn't come up with it, so I'm not saying it's good. You would be on here saying, this is what we know, and this is what you're telling us, what you know. Okay, so that is perfect. Now I'm going to do, before we get into your study, and of course know that we are not going to have all these on, but I want to ask them just in case. Okay, sure. Ready? I'm going to hit you with it.
Yeah.
So now this is time for rapid fire questions with Dr. LaBelle, a.k.a. Mariah. That's so good. That's clever, man. We might never say it again, but for now it works. What would you tell a doctor to get them to understand that you want your child to have an MRI to show or prove that they can have changes in the brain?
I would say that your child having an MRI is probably not going to convince a physician of that, but rather it's the broader research literature that shows unequivocally, for sure, there are brain changes and brain growth in kids with FASD. They may be different types of changes that we see than we see in kids without FASD, but absolutely the brain is growing and changing in kids with FASD. But we can show that from the literature. An individual MRI is not going to provide that evidence.
Good. And if we have to say this 10 times, I don't mind it, because maybe a parent has to hear that it's not going to be as effective 10 times. By the way, these questions are coming from our beautiful members in our closed Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/FASD forever. Shameless plug. If my doctor has an MRI of their brain for a non-FASD reason, would the doctor reading the MRI notice anything related to FASD, or is that something they only look for when asked to?
So again, whether they were asked to or not, they're unlikely to see any abnormalities that they could comment on because of the FASD, because those differences are so subtle that they're not visible to the naked eye, and we need to look at them on a group level. So an individual MRI is not going to help diagnose FASD, nor would somebody be able to tell that there is FASD just by looking at a brain image.
Beauty, buddy. My kids were a part of an ongoing research study at the Calgary Children's Hospital looking at the brains of kids exposed to alcohol in utero. We have gone there several times, and I'm wondering if she knows when we could possibly hear any info about their findings. Does that sound like you guys?
That sounds like us. Great question. I assume that was one of the younger kids. So we're just digging into that data now. We published our first paper on that data recently, just I think last month. And we sent out a newsletter with some of those findings. So if anyone wants
to send it to me, I'm going to put it. We have a blog. We have a blog by the company.
So I will send it to you. And to this family specifically, if they didn't get a newsletter or some information about that, they can get in touch with us and we can send that in.
At what age can an MRI be done? I have requested an MRI several times and have been denied my request. Is this because you've denied your request because an MRI is not as useful for an individual with FASD? So do you think that they know that and that that's why they're denying their request?
Yes. Now, to answer the age question, though, which is a separate question.
Okay. Right?
You can have an MRI at any age. We've been working very hard to make it child friendly. So we scan kids as young as 2 in the MRI, but that's for research. Again, this is not a diagnostic test, and MRI is not going to be diagnostically useful for FASD at any age.
What have you noticed most in the cognitive and the behavioral symptoms resulting from prenatal alcohol exposure in your MRI studies?
We've been focusing on 2 things so far. We've been looking at motor function and motor abilities, which we know are often impaired in people with FASD, and we've been looking at mental health.
This young member says, I remember reading that even though a child has an FASD diagnosis, it would not necessarily show up in their brain scan. Is that the case, and or is technology better now?
That's a great question, and you're correct that it wouldn't necessarily show up in the brain. Technology is getting better and better, and I mean, there's hope that someday we might be able to do that, but currently MRI is not going to point out abnormalities.
There are different, this isn't a question, this I'm just expanding on it, but there are different MRIs, right?
Mm-hmm. We can measure all sorts of different things with MRI. We can look at brain structure in a few different ways, and we can look at brain function in a few different ways. And absolutely, at a group level, we see differences between people with FASD and people without. But on an individual level, we're not at a point where we can diagnose anything.
Amen. I hope you guys are hearing a theme, and I'll say it as many times as it's needed. We're not being jerks. You might have to tell other people this. You are going to run into people. You're going to, even if you're in our closed group, and somebody's going to say, is an MRI purposeful or is it useful? And you will have heard the answer so much from an awesome doctor who does this for a living. that it is not beneficial, but in a group setting, it is.
Yeah, trust me, if MRI was useful, I would be telling everyone to get it. That would be the dream if it could diagnose things, but we're not there.
Can an MRI change? Young brains have tremendous plasticity, and if so, if the child is given the right scaffolding and environment to promote executive functioning, will the brain grow/change from a previous MRI?
Absolutely. So brains in kids grow anyway, and that growth will definitely be influenced by the environment and interventions or treatments that a child may receive. And that's one of the things we're really trying to study. And that's one of the reasons in our study or anything else, people are often asked to return, because that's exactly what we want to look at, is how the brain is growing.
That's a great point. Oh, here's one. Our two sons had SPECT scans done of their brains. A, I'm asking you, what the heck is that? And B, what do these show that MRIs don't, and what do MRIs show that a SPECT scan doesn't? So for me, what's a SPECT scan? And B, what's the answer to her question?
So SPECT is single photon emission computed tomography.
Wow. Okay, Star Trek moment, right? Yeah. What? Say that again.
Single photon emission computed tomography.
Oh yeah, that was
awesome. So it's a functional imaging technique where some sort of tracer is emitted, and as the brain uses that, the brain function sort of essentially gives off a signal that's measured by this scanner. So it's looking at brain function.
Right? Okay.
So it can be a useful technique in some diseases and disorders. Again, it's not going to be diagnostic in FASD. It might be useful for something else, but not for FASD. It tends to be lower resolution than MRI, so we can get better data with MRI. And MRI is safe and non-invasive. We don't have to inject anything, for example, with MRI. Plus, MRI is more versatile in that we can measure both structure and function at the same time.
Ah, cool. Okay, this is great. Now, this is awesome. I just peppered you with questions, but they seem to be similar because people want the answer, and they kind of put their hope in this technology. And I'm glad you're saying that's great, but not individual. And so that's why. So help us out. Come on down to the Brain Scan Center and help us get as much info as possible. You're a researcher. You've been doing research. And you're currently doing you're still recruiting for a long-term research project, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Now I'm going to pull this up. Is the PAE card still relevant today, or is there changes?
Yep.
Okay. Yep. So you are doing a study. Now the study is for folks in Canada. Okay. So if you're listening to the United States, they obviously apologize, but they just wanted to make sure there was no insurance issues. They appreciated if I know parents would come, parents would come, right? Mm-hmm. Like they just want answers. But hopefully, you know, now that, this part of this, it's not going to give you individual answers, but they are looking for a group so they can study the data.
And we can absolutely share our findings. Hopefully they will be broadly useful to people everywhere.
Right. Sure. And research and to help interventions.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Now tell us about the study.
So we're doing a study that's really focused on understanding the brain and mental health in youth with FASD. So kids from 7 to 15, and we're really trying to understand what parts of the brain are atypical and how that's related to mental health symptoms and mental health problems that might be emerging around this age range.
Let's say, what's this look like? So we're looking for youth in 7 to 16, correct?
That's right.
Exposed to alcohol during pregnancy, is a diagnosis necessary?
No, you don't need a diagnosis, but you do need confirmed alcohol exposure, not suspected.
Okay, so it has to be confirmed. So maybe these are folks on a waiting list to get a diagnosis?
Absolutely, that's fine. Yeah.
Okay. And so you are going to have, there's three sessions. So it's in either Calgary or Edmonton.
That's right.
To get there, right? So you are offering a some compensation, right? For the first time, 150, yeah. Second time, $50, third time, 250.
Yeah. And this second time is not a visit, just to be clear. The second time is all done online.
Okay. So the first one is an MRI scan.
That's right.
It's a 4-hour assessment and an MRI scan. What are you assessing?
We're looking at mental health as well as cognitive or thinking abilities and behavior. So it's quite a comprehensive assessment that involves some interview questions with the parent, some assessment interview type questions, game style with the child, and some paper or online questionnaires that the parent has to complete. It's a neuropsych assessment.
Okay. Oh, okay, great. So so this is a neuropsych assessment, but you're also going into the day-to-day living, right? Like the functioning?
Yeah.
Okay. So is it basically like when they do diagnosis, they look at the 10 brain domains? Are you dipping into that?
There would be a lot of overlap with a diagnostic assessment. Yeah.
Okay. And then it's an MRI scan as well.
That's right. Yep.
Now, you've pimped these MRI scans out, correct? Right. Why don't you tell us how you pimp these out?
Yeah. So at the Children's Hospital in Calgary, the MRI scanner looks like a rocket ship. So kids get
okay. Yes, I'm already in. Yeah. Go on.
Yeah, I know. People think it's just for kids, but really most adults would want to go in a rocket ship.
No, that's your vehicle, dude. That's MRI. That's how you get it. It's a rocket MRI. That's exactly what it is. Okay, keep going. Perfect.
Kids or teenagers can watch a video while they're in there. So people can bring their favorite movie, or we have a selection here. So we really try to make the process very comfortable for people having the MRI. And I think most people find it quite easy.
Right. Because it could be intimidating.
Yeah.
Okay. And then they come for the second, but they don't, it's not an in-person visit. It's 1 year later.
1 year later, we have parents and kids do some online questions, just so we can get an understanding of how their mental health is going in the interim.
Okay. So you're just checking in.
Yep.
Yep. Okay. And then the third time, it's 2 years later. So this is long term. Mm-hmm. You're doing another assessment and another brain MRI scan.
That's right. We bring them back to do the whole shebang again.
What are you hoping to see?
So what we're really interested in is looking at that change over time, both change over time in the brain and change over time in mental health. So really, we want to know if there are some baseline factors that can help us predict who's going to go on to develop a mental health problem or who won't, so that we can understand sort of what predicts that. And secondly, we want to know if the brain is changing differently in kids who have a mental health challenge or who don't, so that we can again start to understand when, where, and how might be the best way to intervene.
Excellent. Anything else you wanted to say about the study? Like if I was in an elevator and I had a kid on the spectrum, and you know, what's your elevator pitch?
So it's a really great opportunity to help us understand FASD, and in particular, how to understand why so many people with FASD have mental health problems. So we really appreciate people who are willing to take the time to participate in the study. We're really grateful, and we obviously couldn't do it without our volunteers and our participants. And we will do whatever we can to make it feasible and pleasant for you. So please help us, and we're grateful.
For the love of God, help us. No, it's people are saying, you know, caregivers say, what's out there? You're trying to find it. You have to get there. It is relatively new. You could be a part of the solution in such a way, like pioneers, basically. And maybe because your kid, you did this study, you added to the data, and they got some really good evidence, which led to really good treatments, which led to amazing and successful outcomes for individuals on the spectrum. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's research that was done 10, 20 years ago that's now finding its way into interventions and treatments. And that's why we certainly don't have all the answers, but what we do have now is a product of research that was done in the decades previous. So we need to keep doing research so that we can keep improving the treatments and our understanding of FASD.
I'm going to give you a phone number. Is this still the same phone number with Mercedes? Is she still rocking and rolling?
Yes.
Two things. You can find all of this information and everything we talked about at www.fasdsuccess.com/podcast. And then you'll go in there and you will see our blog, and it'll have all this information, because I'm not going to tell you to write down www.developmentalneuroimaginglab.ca. You'll never remember that. So fasdsuccess.com/podcast. Also, you can call if you're driving, you know, don't pull over or listen to it later, but you can call and Mercedes, right? Awesome name. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Mariah. See, so we got, she's a part of the team. It's like the MRI Avengers. You could call her, area code 403-955-5548. It's a legit number, even though there's a lot of fives in it. It's a total movie number, but 403-955-5548. Two things. Thanks for vibing and jamming with me, because I appreciate it. You know, you guys are on another level. So thanks for, you know, helping us disseminate the information. And just, I know it's sometimes it's not the information the parents want, but it's what we know, and it's the most accurate. So thanks, dude, for joining me.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
And once we figure all this out, we're going to meet again so we could talk about the outcomes and what you found.
Yes.
And what's next, because there might be, this might launch another study.
Yeah, I mean, that's the hope, is that this will lay the foundation for research where we can start to look at interventions.
With the assessments will come results. Do you explain those results?
Yes, parents get a report that summarizes the child's functioning, and that report, it's possible to share that report. That report is not diagnostic, again. So we are not diagnosing FASD nor any other challenges, but the report will give you a summary of sort of strengths and weaknesses.
Is that explained, or is just a report given?
The report contains an explanation of the different assessments that we did and of the child's performance on those assessments. Is that your question?
Yeah. I want to know if you're going to lay it out for them, what it means.
Yes.
I get parents and, you know, I'm doing consultations and they hand me an assessment and they have no idea.
So the report explains each of the tests we did. So for example, it'll say we did this test that measures language abilities. Your child performed in the average range. It's kind of an example of what it might say.
Awesome. Okay. You're the best. Mariah, that you just made the interview with that. Cool. Thanks for joining us, buddy.
Thank you.
Woo! There's lots to unpack there. Again, I just want to thank Dr. Catherine LaBelle for being a good sport, for allowing me to come up with her Marvel character name. You got to tell me what you think of MRI. I thought it was pretty clever myself. But other than, you know, my hijinks, she brought knowledge bombs. So the goal was to have her repeat over and over again that the MRI on its own isn't a good use of evidence to find out where areas of dysfunction are or any physical abnormalities with the brain. If I can avoid having you go through that, having your kids go through that, what I love about Dr. LaBelle is she was able to really make it simple to understand everything about from the gray matter to being the computers, to the white matters, to being like the connection and the network. She really, you know, broke it down very well, and hopefully you come away with some insight into functioning and structure is everything when it comes to individuals on the spectrum. And we also want to make sure we know that they're humans first, but to get answers about the brain is so important. There's a lot of aha moments, especially about the catch up in late teens, early 20s, how the FASD brain could grow slower in certain areas and faster in other areas. And I just respect the fact that they are in the labs putting in the work, trying to figure out and pinpoint the who, what, where, when, hows when it comes to the structural changes and the chemical changes in the brain. When does that happen so that we can inform better practice and treatment for individuals with their mental health and their well-being? Because when a person functions better, they do better. And that goes for anybody. Keep that in mind. It's functioning first. The better they can function, the better they'll be, and just like you, and the better you'll function as well. I totally believe that. So if you're in the Alberta area, if you are in Canada, basically, and you wanted to travel all that way, that's awesome of you. But as you can see, they're doing a long-term study. Give Mercedes a call. Let's get after it, because it really helps out. And so she says in other areas of the brain, they are seeing benefits now from research done, you know, 15, 20 years ago. So although you that may seem like a long time, it's not a long time. And the more they are able to study the FASD brain now, it will just make the future a lot better for our kids. And just know that there's people in the background really trying really hard and doing the work so that it can make a better life for you and for your kids. So kudos to those guys for sure. Again, if you enjoyed the show, please subscribe. That would be sweet. You'll get notifications right to your phone or wherever you listen to podcasts. Again, this is awesome. We have done 10 shows. I'm experimenting with different kinds of show structures, and you guys will let me know because they will be, you know, listened to the most. And just thanks for being on this journey with me. You have such a tough job, so if I can just even provide an hour like this of learning and laughter, well, then that is excellent. You can find all the show notes from the show at fasdsuccess.com/podcast, and all of the references will be in the show description as well. So until next time, keep doing awesome. Do not quit. If you need to get help for yourself, get help for yourself. I'm in your corner. I'm flipping rooting for you. And I will see you next week with another awesome show.